I suppose it's chapter 11. We mustn't fear it. We must push right in. And Dracula, chapter 11, funnily enough, the time is 11:11. Now, I'm not a great believer in numerology. I'm not a great believer in any of those things, really, but that does strike me as odd. It strikes me as quite odd that that there is something there, something that I should be aware of. No, I'm not a numerologist, and but it's a bit spooky. As Dame Edna used to say, she was obsessed with niceness and spookiness, and the two have strangely converged in today's podcast. There's certainly spookiness, and there's certainly niceness in Lucy Westenra's diary. So the 12th of September, why don't we have a little think about that? This entry, how good they all are to me. I quite love that dear Dr. Van Helsing. I quite love that dear Dr. Van Helsing. I wonder why he was so anxious about these flowers. He positively frightened me. He was so fierce. Well, doctors can be. It's part of their method. And yet he must have been right, for I feel comfort from them already. Oh, the old garlic flowers. Somehow I do not dread being alone tonight, and I can go to sleep without fear. I shall not mind any flapping outside the window. Oh, the terrible struggle that I have had against sleep so often of late. The pain of sleeplessness, or the pain of the fear of sleep. And with such unknown horrors as it has for me. As it has for me. Many possible multiples of meaning and emphasis there. I've tried one, and it was wrong. Then I tried another, and that was wrong. But I'll carry on. How blessed are some people, could have gone with blessed, whose lives have no fears, no dreads. Well, you've always combed your hair very straight. To whom sleep is a blessing that comes, that didn't work, comes nightly and brings nothing but sweet dreams. Well, here I am tonight, hoping for sleep, and lying like Ophelia in the play, with virgin crants and maiden struments. I never liked garlic before, but tonight it is delightful. There is peace in its smell. I feel sleep coming already. Good night, everybody. And at that point, luckily, she put down her pen, her quill, her biro, her bic, and rested back into those lovely hypoallergenic downy pillows of yesteryear. And she's spark out, and she doesn't mind any flapping outside the window. Who does? Who does? Dr. Seward's diary. 13th of September. 13th of September. Called at the Barclay and found Van Helsing as usual up to time. The carriage ordered from the hotel was waiting. The professor took his bag, which he always brings with him now. Let all be put down exactly. Van Helsing and I arrived at Hillingham at 8 o'clock. It was a lovely morning. The bright sunshine and all the fresh feeling of early autumn seemed like the completion of nature's annual work. No idea what he's on about. The leaves were turning to all kinds of beautiful colours, but had not yet begun to drop from the trees. When we entered, we met Mrs. Westenra coming out of the morning room. She's always an early riser, so am I. She greeted us warmly and said, "You will be glad to know that Lucy is better. The dear child is still asleep. I looked into her room and saw her, but did not go in, lest I should disturb her." The professor smiled and looked quite jubilant. He rubbed his hands together and said, "Aha, I thought I had diagnosed the case. My treatment is working." To which she replied, "You must not take all the credit to yourself, Doctor. Lucy's state this morning is due in part to me." Oh, God, what's she done? "How do you mean, ma'am?" asked the professor. "Well, I was anxious about the dear child in the night and went into her room. She was sleeping soundly, so soundly that even my coming did not wake her. But the room was awfully stuffy. Oh, God, of course it was. There were a lot of those horrible, strong-smelling flowers about everywhere. Reminded me of foreigners. And she had actually a bunch of them round her neck. I feared that the heavy odour would be too much for the dear child in her weak state. So I took them all away, popped them in the recycling bin, the brown one, opened a bit of the window to let in the fresh air, had a swig of wild turkey from a litre bottle. You will be pleased with her, I'm sure. She moved off into her boudoir, where she usually breakfasted early. As she had spoken, I watched the professor's face and saw it turn ashen grey. He had been able to retain his self-command whilst the poor lady was present, for he knew her state and how mischievous a shock would be. Well, not really mischievous, is it? Yes, sorry, love. I am sorry about your daughter. Needed the garlic to prevent her being bitten by a centuries-old total count who, I'm afraid, would have rendered her into a little vampire. He actually smiled on her as he held open the door for her to pass into her room, but the instant she had disappeared, he pulled me suddenly and forcibly into the dining room and closed the door. Then, for the first time in my life, I saw Van Helsing break down. He raised his hands over his head in a sort of mute despair, and then beat his palms together in a helpless way, as if acknowledging his gratitude to the NHS. I was able to slip a Lucrezia saucepan into his hand, and into his other hand a wooden spatula. He was able to beat... Anyway, enough of that. Finally, he sat down on a chair, and putting his hands before his face, began to sob with loud, dry sobs. Oh, the dry sobs, touch of the dry, that seemed to come from the very racking of his heart. Then he raised his arms again as though appealing to the whole universe. God, 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 he said. I'm not very good at doing the old Dutch, but I'll give it a go occasionally, but it's just a hint of foreign, you know. What have we done? What has this poor thing done that we are so sore beset? Oh, I'm sorry about that. Use the cream. Is there fate amongst us still? Very limited joke set, I'm afraid. Is there fate amongst us still, sent down from the pagan world of old, that such things must be and in such way? What? This poor mother, all unknowing and all for the best as she think, does such thing as loose her daughter, body and soul. And we must not tell her. We must not even warn her. Or she die, then both die. Oh, yes, she's got terminal cancer, hasn't she? Oh, how are we beset, or something wrong with her, perhaps not cancer. How are all the powers of the devils against us? Well, suddenly he jumped to his feet. Come, he said. Come, we must see and act, devils or no devils, or devils, devils, or all the devils at once. It matters not, we must fight him all the same. He went to the hall door for his bag, and together we went up to Lucy's room. Once again I drew up the blind, whilst Van Helsing went towards the bed. This time he did not start as he looked on the poor face, with the same awful waxen pallor as before. I think I've developed a waxen pallor. It's probably to do with shoving that can... No, it's... Well, that's appalling. He wore a look of stern sadness and infinite pity, as I expected. He murmured with that hissing inspiration of his, which meant so much. As I expected. Nasty hiss. Without a word, he went and locked the door. It's going well. And then began to set out on a little table the instruments for yet another operation of transfusion of blood. Oh, no. I had long ago recognised the necessity and begun to take off my coat, but he stopped me with a warning hand. No, he said, but in a more Dutch way. Today you must operate. I've given all my Dutch today. I shall provide. You are weakened already. Oh, I shall provide, yeah. As he spoke, he took off his coat and rolled up his shirt sleeve. Again the operation. Again the narcotic. Again some return of colour to the ashy cheeks and the regular breathing of healthy sleep. This time I watched whilst Van Helsing recruited himself and rested. Presently he took an opportunity of telling Mrs. Westenra that she must not remove anything from Lucy's room without consulting him, that the flowers were of medicinal value, and that the breathing of their odour was part of the system of cure. "Oh, I'm so sorry, but I do so hate them." Then he took over the care of the case himself, saying that he would watch this night and the next, and would send me word when to come. After another hour, Lucy waked from her sleep, fresh and bright, and seemingly not much the worse for her terrible ordeal. Well, didn't she notice a bloody big needle being stuck into her arm? Slept through that, yeah. What does it all mean? I'm beginning to wonder if my long habit of life amongst the insane is beginning to tell upon my own brain. Well, I'm sure that can happen. Lucy Westenra's diary. 17th of September. 4 days and nights of peace. I'm getting so strong again that I hardly know myself. It is as if I had passed through some long nightmare and had just awakened to see the beautiful sunshine and feel the fresh air of the morning around me. I have a dim half-remembrance of long, anxious times of waiting and fearing, darkness in which there was not even the pain of hope to make present distress more poignant, and then long spells of oblivion and the rising back to life, as a diver coming up through a great press of water. Since, however, Dr. Van Helsing has been with me, all this bad dreaming seems to have passed away. The noises that used to frighten me out of my wits, the flapping against the windows, the distant voices which seemed so close to me, the harsh sounds that came from I know not where, but possibly something to do with the Dutch oven, and commanded me to do I know not what. Flap the sheets, have all ceased. I go to bed now without any fear of sleep. I do not even try to keep awake. I have grown quite fond of the garlic, and a boxful arrives for me every day from Haarlem via DPD, Deutsche Post de Hudehudehade. Tonight Dr. Van Helsing is going away, as he has to be for a day in Amsterdam. I have to be for a day in Amsterdam. Yes, he recreated his curious syntax directly onto the vellum of her paper chase journal. But I need not be watched. I'm well enough to be left alone. It's quite good, because, I suppose the audience go, no, you're not, love, you're not. You need some more tincture of opium and garlic and take it easy, but you need several Securicore members of staff sitting around you. Well, I'm not sure that's the case. Who are the other lot that always guarding hotels? Serco. Yeah, you need a few Serco goons sitting around your bed. Thank God for Mother's sake and dear Arthur's, and for all our friends who have been so kind. I shall not even feel the change, for last night Dr. Van Helsing slept in his chair a lot of the time. I found him asleep twice when I awoke, but I did not fear to go to sleep again, although the boughs or bats or something flapped almost angrily against the window panes. The Pall Mall Gazette, 18th of September. The escaped wolf, perilous adventure of our interviewer. Sorry, what? The escaped wolf, perilous adventure of our interviewer. Interview with the keeper in the zoological gardens. Okay. I'd forgotten all this malarkey. After many inquiries and almost as many refusals, and perpetually using the words Pall Mall Gazette as a sort of talisman, I managed to find the keeper of the section of the Zoological Gardens in which the Wolf Department is included. "Yeah, I want to speak to the head keeper of the Wolf Department." Thomas Builder lives in one of the cottages in the enclosure behind the Elephant House, and was just sitting down to his tea when I found him. Thomas and his wife are hospitable folk, elderly and without children. And if the specimen I enjoyed of their hospitality be of the average kind, their lives must be pretty comfortable. Oh, do you begrudge them their pretty comfortable life? The keeper would not enter on what he called business until the supper was over, and we were all satisfied. "Another Tunnock's tea cake?" No, I don't think he talks like that, does he? But then, when the table was cleared and he had lit his pipe, he said, "Now, sir, you can go on and ask me what you want. You'll excuse me for refusing to talk of professional subjects afore meals. I gives the wolves and the jackals and the hyenas in all our section their tea afore I begins to ask them questions." "How do you mean, ask them questions?" I queried, wishful to get him into a talkative humour. "Well, he sounds fairly talkative already. Hitting them over the head with a pole is one way. Scratching of their ears is another. When gents as is flush wants a bit of a show-off to their gals, I don't so much mind the first, the hitting of the pole part, afore I chucks in their dinner, but I'll wait till they've had their sherry and coffee, so to speak. Wonder what accent this is. Sherry and coffee. Maybe it's like sherry and coffee, so to speak, afore I tries on with the ear scratching. Mind you," he added philosophically, "there's a deal of the same nature in us as in them dear animals. Animals. Here's you a-coming and asking of me questions about my business, and I the grump-like that only for your blooming half quid I'd a seen you blowed fast for I'd answer. For I'd answer. I'd a seen you blowed fast for I'd answer. Not even when you asked me sarcastic-like if I'd like you to ask the superintendent if you might ask me questions. Without offence, did I tell you to go to hell?" "You did." "Without offence, did I tell you to go to hell?" "You did." Yes, I think you'd almost have to be crazy enough to prepare this to make it actually make sense. Preparation. "And when you said you'd report me for using obscene language that was hitting me over the head, but the half quid made that all right. I weren't a-going to fight, so I waited for the food and did with my owl as the wolves and lions and tigers does. But Lord love you. But Lord love your heart. But Lord love your heart. But Lord love your heart. Now that the old woman has stuck a chunk of her tea cake in me and rinsed me out with her blooming old teapot and I've lit up, you may scratch my ears for all you're worth and won't even get a growl out of me. Drive along with your questions. I know what you're a-coming at. That ear escape wolf. Exactly. I want you to give me your view of it. Just tell me how it happened. And when I know the facts, I'll get you to say what you consider was the cause of it and how you think the whole affair will end. All right, Governor. This here is about the old story. That ear wolf, what we called Bursica, was one of three grey ones that came from Norway to Jamrach's, which we bought off him 4 years ago. He was a nice, well-behaved wolf, though never gave no trouble to talk of. He'd have one little pouch of Mr. Caesar's salmon and chicken every night. Tiny pouch seemed to satisfy him. I'm more surprised at him for wanting to get out nor any other animal in the place. No idea. But there, you can't trust wolves no more nor women. You can't trust wolves no more nor women. How far we have come. "Don't you mind him, sir," broke in Mrs. Tom, with a cheery laugh. "He's got mind in the animile so long that blessed if he ain't like an old wolf hisself. But there ain't no harm in him." I fear there may be one in a wolf shortly. That's a bit slow. Anyway, doesn't matter. Well, sir, it was about 2 hours after feeding yesterday when I first hear my disturbance. I was making up a litter in the monkey house for a young puma, which is ill. What a varied job. I was making up a litter in the monkey house for a young puma, which was ill. And when I heard the yelping and howling, I came away straight. There was Bursica tearing like a mad thing at the bars, as if he wanted to get out. There wasn't much people about that day, and close at hand was only one man, a tall, thin chap, with a hook nose and a pointed beard, with a few white hairs running through it. He had a hard, cold look and red eyes, and I took a sort of mislike to him, for it seemed as if it was him as I was irritated at. He had white kid gloves on his hands, and he pointed out the animiles to me and says, "Keeper, these wolves seem upset at something." "Maybe it's you," says I, for I did not like the airs as he give hisself. He didn't get angry as I hoped he would, but he smiled, a kind of insolent smile, with a mouth full of white, sharp teeth. "Oh no, they wouldn't like me," he says. "Oh yes, they would," says I, an imitating of him. "Oh yes, they would," says I, an imitating of him. "They always like a bone or two to clean their teeth on about tea time, which you has a bag full." Well, it was an odd thing, but when the animals see us a-talking, they lay down. And when I went over to Bursica, he let me stroke his ear, same as ever. That there man came over, and blessed but if he didn't put in his hand, and stroke the old wolf's ears too. "Take care," says I, "Bursica is quick." "Never mind," he says, "I'm used to them." "Are you in the business yourself?" I says, taking off my hat, for a man what trades in wolves, and cetera, is a good friend to keepers. Norm, back to Dame Edna. "Norm," says he, "not exactly in the business, but I have made pets of several." And with that he lifts his hat, as polite as a lord, and walks away. Old Bursica kept a-looking arter him, till he was out of sight, and then went and lay down in a corner, and wouldn't come out the whole evening. Bloody hell. Well, last night, so soon as the moon was up, the wolves here all began a-howling. There wa'n't nothing for them to howl at. There wa'n't no one near, except someone that was evidently a-calling a dog somewheres out back of the gardings in the park road. Once or twice I went out to see that all was right, and it was. And then the howling stopped. Just before 12 o'clock I just took a look round afore turning in, and bust me, but when I came opposite to old Bursica's cage, I see the rails broken and twisted about. And the cage empty. And that's all I know for certain. Did anyone else see anything? One of our gardeners was a-coming home about that time from a sing-song, maybe. He said naively and innocently. "Yeah, coming home from an harmony. 52-part Cockney choir, all pearly and that it were. When he sees a big grey dog coming out through the garden edges. At least so he says, but I don't give much for it myself. For if he did, he never said a word about it to his missus when he got home, and it was only after the escape of the wolf was made known, and we had been up all night a-hunting of the park for Bursica, that he remembered seeing anything. My own belief was that the harmony had got into his head. Now, Mr. Builder, can you account in any way for the escape of the wolf?" "Well, sir," he said, with a suspicious sort of modesty, "I think I can, but I don't know as how you'd be satisfied with the theory." "With the theory?" "Certainly I shall, if a man like you, who knows the animals from experience, can't hazard a good guess at any rate. Who is even to try?" "Well, then, sir, I accounts for it this way. It seems to me that that ere wolf escaped, simply because he wanted to get out." From the hearty way that both Thomas and his wife laughed at the joke, I could see that it had done service before, and that the whole explanation was simply an elaborate sell, I couldn't cope in badinage with the worthy Thomas. But I thought I knew a surer way to his heart, so I said, "Now, Mr. Builder, we'll consider that first half-sovereign worked off, and this brother of his is waiting to be claimed when you've told me what you think will happen." "Right, you are, sir," he said briskly. "You'll excuse me, I know, for a chaffing of you. But the old woman here winked at me. But the old woman here winked at me. Which was as much as telling me to go on." "Well, I never," said the old lady. "My opinion is this. That ere wolf is a hiding of somewheres. The gardener, what didn't remember, said he was a galloping northward faster than any horse could go. But I don't believe him, for you see, sir, wolves don't gallop no more nor dogs does. They not being built that way. Wolves is fine things in a storybook, and I dare say when they gets in packs and does be chivying something that's more afeard than they is, they can make a devil of a noise and chop it up, whatever it is. But Lord bless you, in real life a wolf is only a low creature, not half so clever or bold as a good dog, and not half a quarter so much fighting him. It's like pulling teeth, isn't it? This one ain't been used to fight in. This one ain't been used to fighting, or even to providing for himself. He gets his little pouch of Mr. Caesar every night, doesn't he, as I mentioned prior. And more like he's somewhere around the park, a-hiding and a-shivering of, and if he thinks at all, wondering where he is to get his breakfast from. Or maybe he's got down some area and is in a coal cellar. My eye, won't some cook get a rum start when she sees his green eyes a-shining at her out of the dark? If he can't get food, he's bound to look for it, and mayhap he may chance to light on a butcher's shop in time. If he doesn't, and some nursemaid goes out walking or off with a soldier, leaving of the hinfant in the perambulator, well, then I shouldn't be surprised if the census is one babby the less, that's all. How grim. I was handing him the half-sovereign when something came bobbing up against the window, and Mr. Builder's face doubled its natural length with surprise. "God bless me," he said, "if there ain't old Bersica come back by hisself." He went to the door and opened it, a most unnecessary proceeding, it seemed to me. I've always thought that a wild animal never looks so well as when some obstacle is pronounced, when some obstacle of pronounced durability is between us. A personal experience has intensified rather than diminished that idea. After all, however, there is nothing like custom, for neither Builder nor his wife thought any more of the wolf than I should of a dog. The animal itself was peaceful and well-behaved, as that father of all picture wolves, Red Riding Hood's quondam friend, whilst moving her confidence in masquerade. The whole scene was an unutterable mixture of comedy and pathos, which is more than can be said for this reading. Well, this pathos. The wicked wolf that, for a half day, had paralysed London and set all the children in town shivering in their shoes, was there in a sort of penitent mood, and was received and petted like a sort of vulpine prodigal son. Old Builder examined him all over with most tender solicitude, and when he had finished with his penitent, said, "There, I knew the poor old chap would get into some kind of trouble. Didn't I say it all along? Here's his head all cut and full of broken glass. He's been a-getting over some blooming wall or other. It's a shame that people are allowed to top their walls with broken bottles. This here's what comes of it. Come along, Bersica." He took the wolf and locked him up in a cage, with a piece of meat that satisfied, in quantity at any rate, the elementary condition of the fatted calf, and went off to report. I came off too to report the only exclusive information that is given today regarding the strange escapade at the zoo. Dr. Seward's Diary, 17th of September. I was engaged after dinner in my study, posting up my books, which, through press of other work and many visits to Lucy, had fallen sadly into arrear. Suddenly the door was burst open, and in rushed my patient, with his face distorted with passion. I was thunderstruck, for such a thing as a patient getting of his own accord into the superintendent's study is almost unknown. Without an instant's notice, he made straight at me. He had a dinner knife in his hand, and as I saw he was dangerous, I tried to keep the table between us. He was too quick and too strong for me, however, but before I could get my balance, he had struck at me and cut my left wrist rather severely. We all know what's going on. Yeah. Before he could strike again, however, I got in my right hand, and he was sprawling on. I got in my right hand. I got in my right hand, and he was sprawling on his back on the floor. My wrist bled freely, and quite a little pool trickled onto the carpet. I saw that my friend was not intent on further effort, and occupied myself binding up my wrist, keeping a wary eye on the prostrate figure all the time. When the attendants rushed in and we turned our attention to him, his employment positively sickened me. He was lying on his belly on the floor, licking up, like a dog, the blood which had fallen from my wounded wrist. He was easily secured, and to my surprise went with the attendants quite placidly, simply repeating over and over again, "The blood is the life, the blood is the life." Yeah, it's not a parrot. I cannot afford to lose blood just at present. Oh no, I've forgotten that you've already given. I've given already. I've lost too much of late for my physical good, and then the prolonged strain of Lucy's illness and its horrible phases is telling on me. I am overexcited and weary. Well, tell your voice. And I need rest. 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 Terrible. Happily, Van Helsing has not summoned me, so I need not forgo my sleep. Tonight I could not well do without it. Well, no, you're a husk. You've been all... Yeah. Telegram, Van Helsing, Antwerp. I fully agree with that statement. To Seward, Carfax. Sent to Carfax, Sussex, has no county given. Delivered late by 22 hours. Bloody post office. 17th September, do not fail to be at Hillingham tonight, if not watching all the time. Frequently visit and see that flowers are as placed. Very important, do not fail. Shall be with you as soon as possible after arrival. I must linger in duty-free. Dr. Seward's Diary, 18th of September. Just off train to London. The arrival of Van Helsing's telegram filled me with dismay. A whole night lost, and I know by bitter experience what may happen in a night. Of course it is possible that all may be well. But what may have happened? Surely there is some horrible doom hanging over us that every possible accident should thwart us in all we try to do. I shall take this cylinder with me, and then I can complete my entry on Lucy's phonograph. See, how modern is that now? He's got his phonograph cylinder, and, you know, so much better, so much easier than just jotting it down in a notebook. Yes, I've got this wax cylinder, which I have to carry very carefully. It's very bulky, the size of a Party 7, and I need to put it on the spindle, and then hopefully, all being well, the electricity's going, I'll crank it up, put the stylus on it, and yeah, it's a really convenient way of recording someone's voice. In fact, I'm doing this on a phonograph, which makes it, that's why it's so much hiss to it. Don't know how much more of this we want to do today. I'm going to call it, I think, and say, well, that's been special. I've got to read the meters now and, you know, send off lots of money to Shell Energy. What they've got to do with electricity and gas, I have no idea. But it's interesting, isn't it? All these utilities companies are really trying to get you to sign up to everything else under their little umbrella as well. Would you like Shell Energy to provide you with telephonic services, phonographic services, the internet services, fast fibre? Would you like us to provide your water or chemtrail juice? Yes, I'd like a pint of chemtrail juice, please, delivered every morning. Unpasteurised, obviously. Obviously, and yeah, that's it. Thank you. I'll go and read the meters now. Bye.